Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome along. Thank you very much for downloading. It is episode 122 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossley, and alongside me this week, a welcome return for Carl McQueen.
Hello there.
And also eating his, what was it?
His chicken superfood salad.
His chicken superfood salad is Mr. David Cameron Walker. How are your hangovers on Sunday, fellas?
What's so super about the salad, first of all?
I don't know, actually.
Got a little couscous.
Just general
some
sort of
quinoa.
Salad.
I just thought it was called quinoa. Apparently it's pronounced quinoa.
Yeah, good knowledge. Hangovers all right, weekend?
Fine.
Yeah, good.
I think it was a two-hour bus journey home that saved me.
Yeah, it was a nightmare, that wasn't it? Right, I thought we'd start this week with a quick quiz. So computers off, iPads off.
One of these.
Yeah, okay, yep. This Sunday it's the final of the Johnston's Paint Trophy at Wembley. Chesterfield against Peterborough. It's 30 years this year since the tournament began, so how well do you know the Johnston's Paint Trophy, or the Football League Trophy to give it its name? Five questions, shout your name when you know the answer, okay? Which club has won the tournament twice and lost in four finals?
Carlisle. No, he said
shout
name.
Your name.
No, so it's Carlisle. I said it, Carl.
1-0 to Carl.
Thank you.
Unless you've changed your name to Carlisle in the last.
I was going
to
say Carlisle.
Okay. 1-0 McQueen. Which of these sponsors did not used to sponsor the tournament? Sherpa Vans, Skoll, or Autoglass?
Carl.
Yes, Carl.
Skoll.
Correct. They sponsored the Scottish League Cup in the 80s. You've got a lot of jobs. You've got some comeback to do it. Which current Premier League manager won the trophy in 2010?
Dave.
Yes. Giving himself thinking time.
That's not allowed.
Current Premier League manager.
It's not allowed.
2010.
4 years.
It's taking too long. Come on.
Five, four, three, two, one.
Oh.
No, gone.
Current.
The answer. The answer is Alan Pardew with Southampton.
Yeah, of course it was.
On the beat, Carlisle. Question four. Danny Filliskirk is the top scorer in this season's competition, but who does he play for?
Me.
Yes.
Well, that don't count.
Oldham.
You're correct. 2-1.
Son of Tony Filliskirk.
Last question.
Is Tony? Is that right? Sure, you should be a footballer.
Well, if that's question five.
Someone Google it. Only one club have won the English League title and won the Football League trophy. Who are they?
Oh, that's interesting. Only the English League title. So that's.
Yeah.
All time.
Yes, Carl.
This is
the last question.
I was going to say Huddersfield, but I don't know if Huddersfield. Is it Huddersfield?
No.
No.
Dave? One guess, if not, you lose 2-1.
Can I have a clue?
No.
Slowly's chance.
Okay, they are not in the Premier League now.
Oh, great, yeah.
But they're having a good season. That's
just,
it. Sorry,
just because he's behind.
Five.
Tony Filliskirk.
Preston.
Three. It's Wolves who won it in 1988. So, Carl, you know your Johnston's Paint Trophy. We will preview the final, this weekend's final between.
Technically, I won that.
How?
Well, because I got the first question.
Oh, right, okay, yeah, whatever. Chesterfield against Peterborough, we'll preview that later, and we'll react to the news that for pretty much the first time I can ever remember, someone has actually failed the Football League's fit and proper person test. That's Massimo Cellino, and barring an unlikely appeal, it means that Leeds still need new owners. We'll talk about that and the ramifications of that decision later, plus review all the weekend's action. Big wins for Reading and Ipswich in the Championship in particular, a superb comeback from the MK Dons in League One that earned one of us here a little bit of money, and in League Two, Gary Waddock's arrival at Oxford, plus the relegation battle to end all relegation battles. Almost half the division still scrapping for survival. One club being Exeter City. They badly needed 3 points at the weekend because they hadn't won in front of their own fans at St James's Park in over 5 months. And finally, they delivered. They beat Fleetwood 3-0, a result which gives their prospects of securing their status in the Football League a huge boost. We'll talk later about a difficult season for Paul Tisdale and his players to Simon Larkins, who's a sports reporter for the Exeter Express and Echo, plus a regular on the ECFC Talk podcast. But first, let's be honest, there's only one massive story in town this week. Following a season full of political manoeuvring, touchline bans, arguments with photographers, media blackouts, Nottingham Forest have finally pulled the plug and sacked their manager, Billy Davis. It follows a run of 7 league games without a win, a sequence of results that's knocked them out of the Championship playoff places for the first time in 4 months. The final straw was Saturday's humiliating 5-0 defeat to Derby, their worst defeat to their arch rivals in 116 years, and to make it worse, while masterminded by their old manager, Steve McLaren. Now, as we record on Monday evening this week, there's all sorts of rumours doing the rounds about Neil Warnock coming in or not. Forest chairman Fawaz Al I knew I was going to screw that up. How do you say it, Dave?
Fawaz Al Azawi.
Yes, him. Mr. Azawi has stressed the need for patience as he searches for the right man to come in. So who is going to be their 21st manager in 21 years since the retirement of the late Brian Clough? And can that manager get them back to the Premier League for the first time since 99? I've got two guys on the line right now who are going to help us dissect all this. Steve Wright writes the Mist Rolling In from the Trent Forest blog. He's also written for Seat Pitch and The Two Unfortunates. Daniel Storey is a freelance football writer who is based in Nottingham, and he writes for Football 365 and many others. Both Steve and Daniel are massive Forest fans, and I'm pleased to say they both join us on the line right now. Daniel, let me start with you then. Firstly, your reaction to Billy Davis being sacked. Is this the right decision?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, his association with the club and the club's reputation through Davies was making, you know, it was becoming untenable. He was a man that was very serving, and when things are going right with Billy Davies, then it all seems well. But as soon as things go awry, that's when it becomes very apparent that actually this is a man that doesn't take well to negative publicity and criticism. And some of our performances in the last 8 games have very much deserved that. We've had some horrible injuries, and to be honest, I feel for Davies slightly, and you know that is none of his fault. But unfortunately, what goes around comes around in football, and actually he is a man that, if anyone deserves some bad luck, then it's probably Billy Davies at Forest, to be honest.
Daniel, I remember there was a reasonable amount of good feeling when Billy Davies came back to the club after the tough times that he had under O'Driscoll, McLeish, the whole McLaren saga the year before. And, you know, Davies was sort of seen as this kind of saviour. He's come back and, you know, we were a bit disappointed when he left before. And he nearly got in the playoffs last season. And as you mentioned, all the problems with the media this year have really kind of taken the shine away from some good performances this year until it's kind of unravelled in the last few weeks. But where do you think it went wrong? What changed with Billy Davies this time? When did it kind of turn into all the focus being on the whole, you know, media blackout and everything? Because it wasn't a bad start.
No, it wasn't. I mean, I should say that not every Forest fan was pleased to see Billy Davies back. He is a manager more than probably any other that I can think of that very much divides supporters. There was this feeling of what Billy Davies himself called unfinished business, which is that he felt his original sacking was unfair, and therefore he felt he had a job to do at Forest. Not everyone was pleased to see him back. I mean, part of the reasons he lost his job in the first time, I imagine, are the same reasons he's lost it this time, in that he makes everything very much about the individual rather than the club. He did start well this season, although it should be said that we spent more money than probably any other club than QPR in the summer, and they did make money from their transfers. You know, they sold players like Christopher Samba, which we, you know, the only player we sold was Adam Guadiora. He made so many signings that, you know, it was clear that the club wanted promotion, an automatic promotion. They weren't really interested in the playoffs. As you probably know, Forest have got a pretty awful relationship with the playoffs anyway. And from what the owner, Fawaz Al-Hazawi, has said today, you know, this was a club that expected automatic promotion this season. The last 8 games, we've looked like anything but. And actually, even before that, Burnley and Leicester have both been, you know, they've constantly held Forest at arm's length this season. And we've never really looked like getting the automatic promotion that they wanted. So whilst it's difficult to overly criticise them for our league form in the last 8 games due to the injuries, we've actually never really looked like automatic promotion this season. It's always looked like a building season, which is, unfortunately, when you have new owners with new money and a lot of money, they're simply not going to allow a manager that sort of time.
Steve, I was going to bring you in here. I was reading your piece for The Two Unfortunates, and I know you're of the perspective that you're glad to see the back of Billy Davies because you didn't want him there in the first place. On those side of fans things, why was that? Why did you not want him there all along?
I think it's similar things to what Daniel's already been saying. For me, it was the turning point this time around, particularly. I mean, I wasn't happy when he first came back, but the turning point was when he sort of went public through Jim Price's Twitter account to announce that it was all about payback and talking about revenge. And I think that kind of summed up then all of the problems that we've been having with media relationships and with kind of other relationships within the game as well. It was kind of knowing that that sort of thing tends to follow Billy Davies that made me not want him back predominantly. Having said that, and I say I don't think it is about results this time around, even though we've gone on a bad run. Billy Davies does work like this. He goes in runs, he has good runs, and then he has bad runs. And they tend to kind of average out at the playoffs. And at Forest, what's happened then is that we've stuttered. We've run out of energy, really. We've failed at the playoff stage. Now, given the amount of money that Billy Davies usually spends, and he's done it again this time around, that's a big gamble for me. It's not something that I'm a big fan of. Owners coming in, throwing a huge amount of money at somebody, you can't guarantee that that's going to deliver promotion, and it leads to potential problems down the line. And I think that's the route we've gone down again this time around. And it's a real concern to me about also what are we going to do next? Are we going to continue with this policy? Because we've tried it several times, we've paid big for it, and already the Al Hasawi family are in for a lot of money. I'd be estimating they must be getting somewhere close to 60 million at this stage. That's a big gamble, and it's something that certainly makes me uncomfortable as a supporter.
Steve, tell us a bit about Jim Price, because Jim, I believe, is Billy Davies' cousin, but he's also his agent, and he's been working at the club despite failing a fit and proper persons test. Do you think it is more for sort of that side of things that the axe has fallen on him as opposed to what's actually been happening on the field?
Yeah, well, Jim Price is, as I understand it, he's both Billy Davies' cousin, both his agent, like you said. He's had an unofficial role within the club. I mean, he's talked quite openly himself on Twitter about really a quite active day-to-day involvement, but it's never been made official in any sense. He's not been appointed as a director of the club or in any general manager role officially. It's just been hinted at that that's the type of role that he's been carrying out at the club. I would say that that was one of the reasons, the main reasons around why you would want to change the manager. That's an unfortunate relationship to have within the club, that it wasn't helpful to the club, and that it put other things than football and Nottingham Forest at the top of the agenda. I'd like to think that that's probably, you know, the reason for what's happened. I'm also, though, slightly nervous that it is actually in part because we've fallen out of the playoffs, and that Fawaz feels that we need to get promoted because we've spent a lot of money, and it's almost a reaction to that on his part rather than what I think is a genuine reason for making a change, that the reputation of the club has been tarnished and that these relationships are unhelpful. I mean, certainly, you know, we had Sean O'Driscoll previously. A lot of fans were behind what Sean O'Driscoll was doing. He was only just outside the playoffs as well, and he was sacked in December 2012. So there is a previous record of actually sacking people for not being in a promotion place. And I worry that it actually is results that are going through Fowler's lines, even though I think that is the wrong reason for making the decision. I think there's actually an alternative, very valid reason.
Looking for your injury list, Daniel, how much of a mitigating factor has that been, the serious number of injuries Billy Davies had to put up with this season?
You know, it's been huge. It's you'll speak to fans a lot older than I will, and they'll say it's the worst injury run they can ever remember. And to follow on from Steve's point, therefore, if the reason, as is the suspicion, is that it's results that Billy's been sacked for, then that's when you do have to slightly feel for him, because, you know, no manager could deal with not just the number of injuries, but the injuries to key players. I mean, you know, players such as, you know, we signed Kelvin Wilson for $2.5 million, and he's been injured for most of the season. We've, you know, the captain, Danny Collins, has been injured. We've had Andy Reid injured. We've had Henry Lansbury injured. You know, these are players who are not just good Forest players, they're also players that would potentially be amongst the best players in the Championship. Having said that, the performance, such as the one against Derby, that wasn't just down to the injuries. You know, that was, you know, I was there, and that was a performance that was not just of insufficient quality, but completely gutless and passionless. And the worry, if I was the owner of Nottingham Forest, with the sort of money that Fawaz has got, and therefore, you know, with the accompanying impatience that he'll undoubtedly have, the worry would be that with the money I've put into that club, it's not just the fact that we're falling out of the playoffs, it's the fact that we're falling. You know, we're a club that's not won in seven matches, which, you know, it's not a huge amount of time, but, you know, there hasn't been a decent performance in those seven matches. And the job of someone like Davies is, even within an injury crisis, is to get the most out of what he's got. And to be honest, I don't think that Davies has been doing that of late. Now, whether that, as I say, is because of some of these off-the-field stories and off-the-field publicity that he courts and invites is a different question. But as I say, the job of a manager is to get the most out of the players he's got available. Injuries or no injuries, I don't think Billy Davis has been doing that recently.
So, Dan, that leads me to kind of question, where do Forest go from here? Because it looked like at one stage this morning it was going to be Neil Warnock. As we record this on Monday evening, there are plenty of reports out there saying that Warnock has confirmed that he won't be taking the job anymore. So whoever comes in now has got a depleted team, you know, limited opportunity to bring new players in, and you've got to, you know, the time is fast running out to rescue this season. So whoever comes in, it's going to be a difficult job to get Forest's momentum back.
And I mean, in terms of Neil Warnock, I think it would be fair to say, speaking on behalf of a large number of fans, the main thing that Neil Warnock had going for him was that he wasn't Billy Davies and actually very little else. He's not a fan, he's not a manager that Forest fans have ever warmed to, partly because of his association with different clubs and partly because of just his demeanour. And I think there are plenty of fans that would be happy for him not to join. On a personal point of view, I think that this season is probably pretty much done and dusted. You know, Burnley and Leicester will take those automatic formation spots. I think there's a little doubt of that. And in the playoffs, Forest have been typically unreliable. You know, clubs like QPR and even Derby, as it pains me to say, will probably fancy themselves against them in the playoffs. With that in mind, I would prefer the academy manager, Gary Brazil, to be given until the rest of the season. I don't see any benefit to appointing. I'm never a fan of these appointing a manager until the end of the season basis. I just think it leaves a sour taste in both fans, clubs, and that manager's mind. I don't think that helps. I mean, clearly, if you had a manager that you were confident enough, had enough quality and knew the squad enough to take us into the playoffs from where we are, brilliant. But I don't see that there's any manager out there that has a better knowledge of that squad than Gary Brazil at the moment. He might not be the best man for the job long term, but he is surely good enough to take them until the end of the season. And then in the summer, look to that long-term option. Ideally, make it a young manager with, you know, who looks to build something at Nottingham Forest rather than these short-term options that we constantly seem to be labelling ourselves with. And also a manager that needs to be of a strong enough personality that he feels he's not going to be sacked after a 7-game bad run, quite frankly, because, you know, in the Championship it's a long season. You can go 7 games without winning and still get automatic promotion. They probably will need more money to spend, although I'd be slightly cautious about spending that with the FFP rules. But what they really need is some reassurances from the owner that they will be there for the long term. And quite frankly, whether or not fans wanted David or not, he never really felt like the long term, because he was always just coming back on a personal basis to get his revenge and finish his business.
I just note, just briefly, as the betting odds change almost by a minute at the moment, inevitably someone will get appointed by the time this podcast comes out, but Gianfranco Zola is now very nearly Evans' favourite to take in manager. Warnock's gone out to 10, so, I mean, by tomorrow it'll be someone completely different, obviously. But
Steve, what's your take on where Forest should go from here in terms of the next manager?
Yeah, I mean, I'm nervous at the moment, I have to admit. Like Daniel, I was no great sort of fan and excitement about Neil Warnock coming. But I see that journalists close to him are referring to his uncertainty that he could work with the conditions. Now, that might mean he wanted a longer contract. It might mean he wanted more money. It might also mean that he felt there was going to be some level of interference from the chairman, maybe. That's something that's been intimated by previous managers in this sort of brief ownership period that they've had. The relationship with Sean O'Driscoll implied there was interference. Alex McLeish very quickly decided, although it obviously wasn't going very well for him personally anyway, but he quickly decided that that relationship wasn't working. There's a worry there that actually the way in which the club as a whole is being operated isn't really the way that we would want it to be.
Yeah,
I don't want to make accusations about what he's doing as a chairman. You know, he's got lots of positive aspects to him, but there does seem to be an issue with those relationships.
Yes, and, Steve, this brings me back to kind of what you were saying earlier. You've hit on a really interesting point here, because of the, you know, the overwhelming negativity in the media and from fans towards Billy Davies. It seems a little bit like the chairman is getting off lightly here. That if, you know, he may well, like you said earlier, he may well have made this decision for the wrong reason. It could be a knee-jerk decision because he dropped out of the playoffs and he's thinking, right, panicking here, we need to try and get up this season. And everyone's sort of focusing on, you know, Billy Davies, the Wicked Witch is dead, and we can all go back to going to the matches now and doing our post-match press conferences like the good old days. But actually, the bigger concern here is not that Billy Davies has been sacked. It's that this manager has sacked another, this owner has sacked another manager for the wrong reasons. He's done it before. And, you know, there's got to be real concerns about the long-term sort of direction of the club while Alassari's in charge.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think fans are loath to go there because they know, you know, he's an owner with money, he's putting money in, and they're kind of loath to ask those questions in some cases. But, I mean, you have to look after 20 months in charge and all of these managers and all the things that have happened. You do have to ask questions, and I think more and more voices are starting to say the next most important appointment is not actually the manager, it's somebody to run the club, somebody to stand between the owners and the football side of the business, who's got experience and has got some gravitas and can actually do the delivery for them, bring in the manager and do all of the delivery of football structures and football processes like player recruitment, player development, somebody who can actually lead on that. I think there's a growing discomfort as to whether the owners are actually personally capable of fulfilling that role, even though they seem to have a desire to do so.
Daniel, I'm just interested to get your view on where Billy Davies goes from here, because, I mean, what top club in the top couple of divisions is going to touch him after an episode like this?
I'd be very surprised if a club in the, well, clearly not the Premier League, but even the Championship touched him from here. I think he would probably have received a fairly weighty payoff from the Al Hassawis, which I would imagine both him and Jim Price will be happy to dine out on for a while. From what I hear, I suspect he will. The next move for him is probably a mid to lower table Scottish Premier League club. I mean, I know that whilst obviously Twitter is a global thing, I know that Scotland treats him a little bit more favourably than England currently does, certainly the Scottish media. Therefore, I wouldn't be surprised to see him somewhere in Scotland. That would clearly be quite a sizable hit to the ego of Billy, but you know, that's the bet he made himself. When he came back to Forest with his unfinished business tag, he would have known that he was very much going for sink or swim, and in sinking, I suspect he's burnt his bridges, clearly with the national and local media, but also with the Championship as well, because it's one thing sort of pushing your persona forward and pushing your own individual agenda forward, but that's actually affected, you know, it's not just a local news story anymore, it's become a national news story, and you know, those sort of ripples will stay. He's very much, I mean, you know, he's got too big an ego to take a League One job, quite frankly, unless it was a huge club down in League One. Therefore, his only option really, I suspect, is to go, hopefully tail between legs, back up to Scotland.
The weird thing is, though, I mean, he's by no means the worst manager that Nottingham Forest have ever had. So I don't really understand why he has got caught up in all this kind of paranoia and, you know, photographers and blackouts. Why has all this happened? Why can he not just have got on with the job as normal?
It stems, I mean, I don't know exactly, but I'm almost certain that it stems from his days at Derby, when he felt that having got them to the Premier League, he was cast adrift by their owners in favour of Paul Jewell after not being, you know, it was a terrible start in the Premier League, but he felt they didn't get a fair crack at the whip of the Premier League. And since then, it's almost not been about Billy Davies against owners. It's been about Billy Davies against the Premier League. That's been his nemesis. He wants to get to the Premier League and he wants to prove that he can make it and do a job. And he clearly feels he's a better manager than some managers, and I suspect Warnock would be included in that, that has been given a bigger chance in the Premier League. Therefore, he made this an individual battle because he felt coming back to Forest was his most realistic chance of fulfilling that Premier League dream. And in doing that, he created that revenge mentality, which he knew would get fans on side, because, you know, it's very easy to say it because I'm a Forest fan, but there are, I imagine, very few clubs that feel, whose fans feel that they could and should be in the Premier League but have not been there for 15 years as much as Forest do. In that, he put all those eggs in that basket to get in the Premier League with Forest, and it not having worked, that may well be his last chance to do so. I'd be very surprised if in the next 10 years you see Billy Davies managing in the Premier League, whether it's getting a club promoted there or being appointed by a club that are already there.
Steve, I'll try and end on a positive note. Let's be honest, you're seventh at the moment. The season isn't a write-off. If indeed, as has been mentioned already, maybe Gary Brazil continues the rest of the season. I know he's in charge of the midweek game against Charlton. Just a, again, it's easy to say it's just a couple of wins, but you're in the next best position to be in the playoffs. The season isn't a write-off just yet, surely?
Not entirely. I mean, there's obviously there's a possibility that they can turn form around a little bit, get back into the playoffs. I actually personally think that Wigan are the team that are most likely to go up, assuming that Burnley don't slip up and allow them into the automatic places. I think Wigan are so good, so strong, got so much depth that they will actually win the playoffs anyway. I think this is one of my frustrations with Forest at the moment, is that the way that we approach each season at the moment is that it's almost a we have to go up situation. And you can never do that. You can never guarantee that that's going to happen. And in some senses, that does make this a potential written off season, because we don't have a plan that can incorporate failure to get promoted. Having said that, what is positive is that we've got some very strong young players in this squad at the moment. We've got the Carl Darlows, the Jamal Lascelles, the Henry Lansbury, the Jamie Patterson, all signed up onto contracts. So we've got the core of what is a very exciting and very talented young squad, if we've got the foresight to build upon that in a sensible, managed way, rather than just this sort of 13 players a season summer activity that, to me, is hindering us rather than helping us.
And then next season, it's the 150th anniversary, isn't it, of the club's existence. So, perfect season to go up.
I'm sure we'll find a way to ruin that as well.
Right, let's leave it there, guys. Thank you very much for coming on and speaking to us. That was Steve Wright, Forest fan, and Miss Rolling In from the Trent blogger, who's also written for Seat Pitch and The Two Unfortunates, and Daniel Story, writer for Football 365 and many others. Let us know your thoughts if you're a Forest fan at Wagyu Podcast on Twitter. Next, we're going to swap the top of the Championship for the bottom of League Two as the Grecians finally put an end to their home hoodoo. So it was the result that certainly put pay to a few accumulators over the weekend. Exeter City 3, Fleetwood Town 0, and Elliot Richards brace and an own goal by Big John Parkin, condemning the promotion chasing Cod Army to defeat in Devon. And it gave Paul Tisdale's side their first home win in over 5 months. Since they beat Plymouth in early October, they'd lost 8 and drawn 5 of their last 13 at St James's Park, scoring in only 4 of them. Now, though, with a 5-point cushion established above the relegation zone and a big fixture coming up in midweek at Plymouth, can Exeter push on and finish the season strongly, or could they still be caught by the teams below them and suffer relegation out of the Football League? Let's find out more about that win on Saturday and a difficult season so far from Simon Larkins, who is a sports reporter for the Exeter Express and Echo and a regular on the ECFC Talk podcast, which comes out every Thursday. Simon, first of all, thank you very much for talking to us. Let's start with Saturday's game, if we can. I think it was one win in the last 14 before Saturday. How much did the whole club need a lift with that result and performance?
They definitely did need it. They were close to breaking, I think, a record held by Darlington for consecutive games at home without a win. They were about two games away from that. And with home games from now until the end of the season, Accrington still to face at St James's Park, Cheltenham still to face at St James's Park, Torquay still to face at home as well. They needed a lift at home and a result and a belief that they can pick up the points needed now and from now until the end of the season at home. So it's a crucial win, really.
Simon, I find Exeter quite a curious club, because we've spoken about them a number of times over the last few years on this podcast. I seem to remember a couple of seasons ago we were discussing a similar sort of poor run of form at home, not quite as bad as this one maybe, but there were certainly problems, more problems at home than there were away. And you know, you've kind of fluctuated. The form has been up and down. Paul Tisdale's still has this reputation as being a bright young manager, bit of a character, sometimes gets links with jobs at higher levels, but yet the club aren't really doing that well. You're not really going anywhere at the moment. And I dare to say that if Exeter were another club, Paul Tisdale may well not be there anymore, such as the kind of almost malaise that you sort of sometimes appear to be in.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. I mean, you mentioned there that a few years they were doing well and perhaps Paul Tisdale was being linked with higher league jobs. Well, they actually put him on a very good contract when he was being linked with the likes of Swansea just before Brendan Rodgers got the job. Southampton before Atkins got the job there. He was being linked with both of those jobs, and they put him on a kind of a two-year rolling contract, I believe, and that meant they would get some compensation when they believed Tisdale would move on to a higher job. But the flip side of that is that when things haven't gone wrong, obviously Tisdale's got the job security that perhaps other managers in other positions haven't. We saw, obviously, Chris Wilder leave Oxford as his contract was running down. Well, Tiz doesn't have that because it's continuously a two-year rolling contract. So in terms of getting rid of Tiz, it would have been very difficult. I'm not sure that would have been the right answer anyway to Exeter City's troubles this season, but it would have been very difficult for the club to have done that. And they seem to have a lot of patience aboard and believe in what Tiz is trying to do with the club. Obviously, they haven't got a lot of money because they're supporter trust-owned as well. So, you know, they can't just go hiring and firing managers and leave them in a worse financial situation.
What's the reaction been like amongst the Exeter fans? Because obviously he's a much-loved manager for what he's achieved at the club. And I think, is it something stupid like he's the second longest-serving manager after Arsene Wenger out of all 92 league clubs, something like that? Mm-hmm. In a situation like this where you go so long without a win, particularly at home, and obviously Exeter's a long way from a lot of the other places that they're playing League Two, so there might not be a huge percentage of fans who travel away. Has the frustration sort of boiled over to a point where they've been calling for his head?
Yeah, he's a manager that polarises opinion amongst people at St James's Park. There's some that sympathise with him with the lack of money that he's had to spend, and then there's others that, you know, have just got frustrated with the home form. And it did boil over a bit when they lost to Northampton 1-0 earlier this month at home. There were chance of Paul Tisdale taking us down, but I think it only needed a positive performance like the win against Fleetwood for people to have a bit more faith and believe that Tiz is going to keep Exeter City up this season. So it's not got to the point where the majority of the fans want him out, but there's certainly a vocal, possibly 40%, who believe perhaps he should be on his way. But again, it's very difficult for them to get rid of him based on the contract he's on, and I think it would be the wrong move as well.
Simon, for those of us who don't get to see the team week in, week out, what sort of squad has put itself got at his disposal to keep the club in the Football League this season?
Well, he brought back a few of the experienced players because they perhaps had been not performing the best throughout the season, and he was blooding a few youngsters into the side in the hope that might turn results round. But he's brought a few of the experienced heads back into the side for the Newport game where they got the 1-1 draw there and the win against Fleetwood. He brought Butterfield back into the side at right back. He brought Matt Gill into a central defensive midfield role. He also moved Scott Bennett, who, although is only 22, he's got a good amount of experience, over 100 league games with Exeter City, so he's got a good amount of experience. And it's those players that, if they can perform from now until the end of the season, the eight remaining games, that are going to keep Exeter safe, because they've just got a bit more solidity about them in defence. And if those players can continue the performance that they showed against Fleetwood in the remaining eight games, maybe pick up a few more clean sheets than they have this season, because currently they've got six, which I think matches Torquay, but it's one of the worst records in League Two. And, you know, if they can just perform well from now until the end of the season, pick up a couple more clean sheets, I don't think they'll be in danger of going down, but we'll just have to, fingers crossed on that, really.
You're currently 20 points off your total amount of points that you got last year. You got 64 points last year, which was, I think, 5 points outside the playoffs in the end. But you're in the playoff shake-up for large parts of last season. It's unlikely that you're going to get anywhere near the 64-point mark this season. You'd have to win pretty much all of your games left. So what has been the reason for the drop-off this season? I know Jamie Cureton, obviously, who scored a lot of goals for you, had to leave the club. I think some other players left in the summer as well. But, you know, do you think it's been justified, you know, this drop-off in terms of Paul Tisdale having a weaker squad at his disposal this season, or should we have done better this season, do you think?
Well, 21 goals from Jamie Cureton this season would have certainly helped. The strikers currently at the club haven't weighed in with that amount of goals. I think own goal is currently the second highest scorer in the squad, so tells its own story. Alan Gow got 7, and then of course he had to be loaned out to ease the cash flow situation in January. Would Exeter City have struggled to the point where people were actually predicting them to go down had Alan Gow stayed in January? Probably not, but I think goals has been a problem. So there's mitigating circumstances when you see how the club have done this season in terms of a weaker squad. So there's certainly that belief. But to be in a relegation scrap and a dogfight, I think most fans would say that's below par, and they would have been expecting Exeter City to be somewhere around mid-table, maybe pushing for a playoff place late on. So it's fallen below expectations, I would have said.
Say Exeter do stay up, what happens during the summer, Simon? What changes need to be made to help improve this squad in terms of, you know, certain positions? I mean, Paul Tisdale, one assumes, would stay on if they stay up. But what needs to change during the summer, you think, to ensure they have a better time next time around?
Well, they need answers off the field. The Alan Gow sale was quite worrying because they were talking about the budget for next year, and they said, well, they couldn't afford Alan Gow's wages. So the chances are that they might have to get rid of a few more players in the summer. And you look at how that affected Torquay in the summer, because Torquay only just survived last year, had to get rid of a few of their players, and they look almost certain to go down that year. And that's very worrying if Exeter City are going to do the same. So I wouldn't say necessarily changes on the pitch need. They need answers at board level. They need more investment coming in. They need to think of more revenue streams, how to get more money into the club. Gates have fallen below 3,000, which it was unexpected from at a board level. So they're missing out on all that money. Season ticket renewal sales aren't going well. So they need to find more answers off the pitch than they do on it if they survive in the summer.
Obviously, you mentioned the ownership situation there and the board. Obviously, Exeter is one of the handful of clubs that are owned by the supporters. How do you think... We were talking recently to a Wycombe Wanderers fan who have kind of moved away, look like they're going to be moving away from the fan ownership model, and we're talking about the pros and cons of that. How has it worked out for Exeter City? And, you know, do you see a change in the future? You know, if you're going to move forward, does then ultimately, you know... Can fan ownership only take you so far?
There's an element to that. I think certainly there's a belief that fan ownership can only take you so far. You look at the clubs in League Two, and you say Exeter City were probably one of the poorest in the fact that in terms of squad and wages, they just go on a cash flow basis. They need investment, but at the same time, fans are very worried because obviously they've had a few dodgy owners in the past, so you don't want someone like that coming in and putting the club into the jeopardy it was before. But perhaps outside investment might be the way forward, moving away from the fan ownership, or just, you know, trying to think outside the box a bit with how to get more money into the club, more people through the gates, and try and perhaps cut more expenditure, not on the playing side, but, you know, at board level, or make sure it's better run in that sense.
Thanks very much for coming on, Simon. Nice to talk to you.
No worries.
Try and enjoy the rest of the season if you can. That is Simon Larkins, sports.
We need a few more home wins, if that's the case.
I think you're playing. I support Bury. I think you're playing us in a couple of weeks. So I think you've got a few games actually against a team still below you. So you could still get right back into it
as well.
Yeah.
So Bury's an away one, so I fancy our chances against Upper Kick Lane.
All right, that's you faded out. That was Simon Larkins, sports reporter for the Exeter Express and Echo, and a regular on the ECFC Talk podcast. If you want to hear more from Simon, download that on Thursday this week. Next is the bit of the show where we give Football League fans 125 seconds to tell us all about their side, all to celebrate the 125th anniversary of the Football League. And today, it's the turn of Huddersfield Town.
This is We Are Going Up, my club in 125 seconds.
Hello, my name's Stephen Rothard and my club are Huddersfield Town.
So Stephen, do you remember your first trip to, well, I suppose, would it have been the John Smith Stadium?
No, it was the McAlpine Stadium back then.
And what was the game?
It was Wycombe Wanderers. We lost it 1-0, I seem to remember.
Who is your favourite Huddersfield Town player of all your years as a fan?
Difficult one. Been a few, but I guess I'd probably go for Andy Booth.
Of course.
And what about the worst player, though, to ever grace the Huddersfield shirt?
the worst player. There's been a few of them. We had a guy when Lee Clark was here called Dominic Worley. He lasted for about two games and then we never saw him again. He was pretty terrible.
What position?
Well, he's trying to be a left back, I think.
Poor old Dominic. What do you prefer? Alfred McAlpine, John Smith, or Galfond?
If I'm choosing, I prefer Leeds Road.
Good. That's the right answer.
Tell us about... Well, I mean, you've had so many sort of seasons in the playoffs and playoff finals and stuff like that. Tell us about the worst moment of one of those campaigns when you've nearly gone up but not quite made it.
Yeah, I think the worst one was probably the Peterborough one we lost at Old Trafford. We finished about 7 million points above them in the league and just capitulated in the playoff final.
Have I made this up or did Jordan Rhodes not play in the final?
We played Benny Kofoba on his own.
Lee, what are you doing? What was that all about?
Let's end on a positive then. What has been the best moment of being a Huddersfield Town in your short existence?
It has to be the Sheffield United final, watching Stevenson blast the last penalty over the bar.
Even seeing through that penalty shootout, which probably lasted longer than the game itself.
It's probably the most horrible 17 minutes of my life. Like the greatest few days.
Fantastic. Well, Stephen, your 2 minutes is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My club in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
So there will be another My Club along next week. If you'd like to come on and represent yours,
come up with an idea yet of how we're going to get all these clubs.
I was about to say this, yeah.
Come on.
Before the end of the season, we do need fans. At Wagyu Podcast, or you can get in touch. wearegoingup.co.uk/contact. Yeah, so we've still got quite a lot of fans to get
through.
We're
going to need to start getting fans who support multiple clubs to do it all at one point.
You might have hit on a great idea there. Yeah. But if you do, you should be banned because you shouldn't be supporting more than one
club. They're the kind of people that buy those scarves that have got both teams on them.
Yeah, in answer to your question, I don't really know. You were suggesting around the time of the playoffs, perhaps when it's a bit empty, maybe just getting like 20 fans on.
Yeah.
I don't know. We might not be able to make it. We'll see what we can do though between now and the end of the season. Let's talk about what's been going on this week though. Now this is a full set of fixtures in the Football League in midweek that may or may not have been played by the time you hear this. But we're going to touch on what happened on Saturday and Sunday. We'll start with Leicester, 1-1 draw at Blackburn in the Championship. We should wish Nigel Pearson a speedy recovery though. He was taken to hospital after being taken ill during the game, but he should have been released by the time you hear this. It was just as a precaution measure. They drew.
A bit worrying though, isn't it? I mean, as you say, as a precaution, it looks like he's absolutely fine. He'll have the best possible care, but I think he complained of chest pains, didn't he, after the game?
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, there's
spill all over the desk. Sorry.
There's a history of managers, you know, various managers struggling with heart problems. It's a very, very, very intense job, very high stress levels. And, you know, he's probably in the least stressful period that he could possibly be in at the moment, and it's only going to get, you know, worse in the Premier League. So we do wish him all the best, but it's pretty slightly concerning for himself and, you know, for fans of Leicester City.
Well, they look quite fortunate actually to get a point in the end at Blackburn. It does keep that unbeaten run going, that long unbeaten run, 17 games now, and they play Yeovil in midweek, and then on Saturday we have a potential title decider on our hands because it is Burnley against Leicester live on Sky lunchtime on Saturday. Burnley won 3-0 at Charlton to end Jose Riga's unbeaten start there. Ashley Barnes, Michael Keightley and Sam Vokes of his 20th goal of the season. It was 1-1 at the KP. This is a game to look forward to, isn't it? Saturday afternoon.
Absolutely. I mean, as you say, you could really pull Burnley right into the race for the title. You know, both of them. It'd be interesting what the atmosphere at the ground won it, actually, because they are basically both up.
I'm just working this out. I think Leicester can get promoted if they beat Yeovil. And then win this game mathematically. If Derby and QPR drop points, they can be up if they beat Burnley.
I can't work out the maths on the spot of that, but are you sure?
Yeah,
it does seem a bit early, doesn't it?
If they win against Yeovil, that's 84 points. That puts them 18 points clear of Derby. This is rising Derby and QPR dropping points in midweek as well. So it's 18 points clear with six games to go.
No, they won't. It's with 9 games to go.
Good point. Yeah. You know what everyone I've just said.
They've all got nine
yeah,
games
you know
or eight
what
games.
I've just said. Yeah, stop
okay.
They.
They're going to get, but you're right, they're going to
never
get,
do maths on the spot.
They're going to get promoted
but
eventually.
Let's go back to what I was saying. It will be an interesting atmosphere because it's not like they're both neck and neck, and it's not like, say, you know, if one of them were to lose, they may drop out and fall foul of a third place team taking advantage. They're both kind of up, and you know, we'll almost. You know, it's a showdown between the two best teams in the division by quite some way. But it will be interesting to see what it's like and what the game's like. And just a point on Burnley. On Sunday night, I was at an event in Watford put on by Lionel Burney, who we've had on the show before, the author and Watford fan. And it was an offshoot of his book, Tales from the Vicarage. And it was Luther Blissett, Aidy Buford and Sean Dyche all talking about Watford. And I won't bore you with the stuff all about Watford. But just on Sean Dyche, it was very interesting to see him in that setting, away from the football pitch, away from the glare of the post-match interview, where he will, you know, week in, week out, just keep going back to his mantra of working hard every game, one game at a time. That's what we do all season. And he was so relaxed, and there was a real sort of swagger about him, and not an arrogance, but a real confidence and a real self-belief in what he's doing, you know, as a manager, and the journey that he's taken Burnley on, and how he's, you know, you just got the sense that there was such belief in him. You know, it must rub off on the players, and it clearly has done this season.
No hard feelings from him about the way he left?
No, absolutely not. He comes across as a really fantastic guy, very honest, said, look, football's business, and we all live under the threat of leaving a club at any one time. Had it as a player, we'll have it as a manager, and you know, he moved on and wished us all the best. And, you know, the feeling's mutual. But I was just very impressed by him, and I think, you know, when Burnley get promoted to the Premier League, I think he'll be a real star next season. You know, I think the Premier League and the attention that will come to him will, you know, he'll take that very well, and I think the media will love him next season. And I think whatever happens to Burnley, if and when they get up next season, I think Sean Dyche will be in the Premier League for a long time to come.
There was a throwaway comment from Stuart Pearce on the Football Focus actually on Saturday, saying that he is the Football League Manager of the Year. And, you know, even if they don't win the league, I think it's...
Wouldn't be surprised.
Say it's true, but, and I've just worked out, I am right, it requires 7 games to go. If they beat Yeovil and then Burnley, and Derby and QPR both lose, they'll have 21 points with 7 games to go.
Clear as mud.
So I did get it right. I just clear said as mud. 7-6 rather than 7.
In the playoffs, good wins for Derby, QPR, Wigan and Reading at the weekend. We've talked obviously about Forest's inadequacies, and although they've got so many players out injured, they were utterly destroyed by Derby on Saturday. Derby, yeah, team who hadn't scored a goal, I think, for 6 hours or something like that before, 4 games before that match. And Craig Bryson taking the headlines in particular with a hat-trick, and he's been integral all season to what they've been doing. And they really overwhelmed Forest with the runners from midfield, Hendrick, Bryson and Bamford linking up very well.
Yeah, very much. I mean, they, for all the talk of Forest, Derby were excellent at the weekend. Craig Bryson, he's done wonders for my fantasy football team. I know you guys have forgotten about that, but I believe I'm sat 11th in the year. We are going up.
This is why you
standings
do so well, because you're changing and tinkering every week. When we're off, we've all forgotten about it.
Absolutely, yes. It's just shaped his own money at stake.
I think I've still got Diego Fabbrini in my team. He plays in Italy now.
I mean, Craig Bryson, yeah, wonderful season. I mean, what is he, 27, 28, which is, I suppose, getting on a bit nowadays in footballers' terms. He's been there a few years at Derby now, having made his trades at the likes of Kilmarnock before. If Derby go up, is he the kind of player that they would?
He's interesting.
Do well,
Bryson. He's, you know, and you mentioned Hendrick,
and
old Bamford, yeah, up front, and you know the likes of Ward. Obviously, the big
Will
attention
Hughes.
is always on Will Hughes, but they do have, you know, away from the sort of the star name in Will Hughes. You know, we've talked at length about Chris Martin as well this season. They have these kind of maybe unheralded players who are not household names by any stretch, never necessarily been linked with big moves to other big clubs, but, you know, they've been there for a number of seasons, developing as a team and as a unit under Nigel Clough, and then Steve McLaren's obviously kicked them on this year. But they do have, you know, a good mix there of good experienced players who have all been developing and improving, and this season they've all come together at the right time.
I'll tell you what I did enjoy as well, Steve McLaren coming out to do his post-match interview with Simon Thomas on Sky with a cup of tea in his hand. Just beat your neighbours 5-0, got your first victory in ages, and he was completely relaxed. And obviously a great day for him against his former club as well, to get that victory. And QPR obviously level with Derby now, sorry.
It makes the playoff picture interesting,
yeah, well,
doesn't it?
QPR won, we should say, Middlesbrough 3-1. Enough for Ravel Morrison. I know you haven't seen it, but in injury time, the Middlesbrough goalkeeper, Dimi Konstantopoulos, might have said that wrong.
Yeah.
The ball gets played back to him. Actually, Middlesbrough come close to getting the winner. Ball goes down the other end. He goes to take a kick at it. It takes a horrific bobble just in front of him on the edge of the box, and it's just there, an open goal for Bobby Zamora.
Just, Dave, just think of it as Paul Robinson against Croatia. Kind of missed kick. I mean, in all fairness to him, he could have taken could have taken a touch probably, but he's booked his place in the end of season Duper's reel with that one. And the third goal, which was an excellent taken goal by Morrison, does
5-7. He's got
it was, you know, 3-1
great impact.
A bit of an unfair.
But you're right about the playoff pitch though, because Wigan beat Watford, Reading are there again. They won at the weekend, 2-1 at Birmingham, Joby McEnough in that game. Who else you got? Ipswich winning 2-0 at Brighton. Crowd of nearly 30,000. That was a really big win for Ipswich, because that brings them right back into it.
I noticed Adam Williams tweeted it's of that effect as well. The dream is very much alive, supposedly, at Portman Road. But is it just too much for teams like them and Brighton?
No, but it's not too much, because we've seen a Reading won at the weekend, but they, you know, had a few results. You know, they've kind of been in and out. They're a funny team.
You've got
team
to assume
been...
Wigan and Derby are there, just on their current form.
Yeah, Wigan, Derby, QPR, there. You'd expect to be there. But that sixth place looks like it is very much
Forest,
up for grabs. But
Reading,
all you say Ipswich, is too far Brighton. For Ipswich, but, you know, they are 5 points off Reading at the moment, play the same amount of games.
Could be two by the time you hear this.
Goal difference is 10 less. But, you know, Reading lose the next game, Ipswich win the next game. And he's absolutely on those. You know, you're only Ipswich are at home to Derby on Tuesday night, and Reading are at home to Barnsley. So, you know, that's probably going to work better in the favour of the Royals. But it's only one result away from Ipswich being right on the cusp of it. And they're not a team that have been talked about much within the playoff sort of shake-up this season. I don't think they've ever been in the top six, but, it would be a real fantastic achievement if Mick McCarthy was to get them up into the sixth spot.
Absolutely. Down at the bottom of the table, Doncaster, 3 wins in the last 4 games. At the right time of season to be getting them. Huddersfield, Watford and Sheffield Wednesday. They're 8 points above the drop now. So maybe they'll be safe. Blackpool is again picking up another 1-0 win. They've just about nudged themselves over the line, I think. But down at the bottom, Barnsley lost to a last-minute goal to Bournemouth. Shocking to give away a goal from a corner in injury time when you're down there. Yeovil, Ishmael Miller missed a penalty when they were 2-1 up against Bolton. That would have taken them out of the relegation zone. Zatnai equalised. Millwall lost again, 2-1 at Leeds, who we'll come on to in a second. Charlton did lose, but they had a good win last week. And Birmingham, who play Millwall this week, don't they? So that's a huge game.
It's at the Den on Tuesday night, and it's a massive, massive game for both clubs, but more so for Millwall, really, because Millwall, they actually played really well against Leeds at the weekend, and they're just really struggling in front of goal. The goals have just completely dried up. DJ Campbell got one back for them against Leeds, but it wasn't enough. And, you know, there is real pressure on them to get the win. You know, they've had their big games recently against Charlton. They've had games at home where they just haven't got the results they need, and they absolutely need the point. And it's going to be interesting to see whether those players can deal with the pressure, because then, you know, the Millwall crowd, they're fearsome, and they do support their team, and they are, you know, they are a united sort of force, but they also doesn't take much, I don't think, at the moment for them to kind of be frustrated and to get on the backs of the players. So if they don't start well against Birmingham, you know, who are a better team away from home than they are at home, you know, they could be, you know, this could be a devastating blow if they were to lose to Birmingham. So it's a huge game for Millwall. But just looking at the bottom of the table as a whole, it was interesting to see. Remember how many points it took to stay up last season? That total was so high. Wasn't it Peterborough went down with, they have 54, did they?
They
50 something. And it's not going to take anywhere near that high to stay up this season.
Leeds United then. They beat Millwall, as we just mentioned, 2-1 on Saturday to pick up their first win in 7, but all the action off the pitch. The board of the Football League confirmed on Monday that after considering the eligibility of Massimo Cellino under its owners and directors test, he has failed after being found guilty by a court in Sardinia recently of an offence under Italian tax legislation related to the non-payment of import duties on a boat, and he was fined €600,000 as a result. And he's got 14 days to appeal, but apparently he said before the ruling was announced that he wasn't going to appeal if he was found guilty. So presumably Leeds are back to square one, need an owner again. What does this actually mean for Brian Dermot? Does it mean they might go into administration? Where are we now with this whole shambles of a situation?
Well, I suppose on the surface of it, initially, it's a good thing.
Yeah, is it a good thing that someone's actually been barred from, you know, under this test at
absolutely.
Last?
Absolutely. Yeah, they've got a, you know, it looks to be pretty cut and dry. This guy's been, you know, convicted, you know, of tax evasion, isn't he? And then that's not someone. It may only be for, you know, not paying the tax on a boat or whatever, but you might sound sort of quite a frivolous kind of innocuous thing.
But I bet it was quite a big boat.
Yeah, absolutely. But it would cast aspersions on the man's character, his suitability to run a football club responsibly. And well done for the Football League for finally, you know, taking a stand and saying this guy can't come in. And I suppose Leeds fans will probably breathe a sigh of relief because they've had enough bad owners over the years. But it does, you know, now poses the question, where do we go from here? GFH Capital is still there, and what do we do with them, and who's going to take over? Is there anyone who wants to take over? And, you know,
how desperate are Leeds?
Well, it's a difficult situation. You know, beggars can't necessarily be choosers, but at the same time, you you don't want to just sell yourself and think you take anyone who's got a bit of money to come in. They need to get the right person, and I wonder whether there could be some sort of fan-led situation. You know, Leeds, we talk about the Leeds fan base and how fantastic they are, how big they are, continuously supporting their club through these times
relative
trouble. I don't know where they go from here. I don't know if there's been any concrete, you know, kind of reports or people wanting to take over. We need to speak to some Leeds fans about that, but it's a difficult one. And yet again for Leeds on the pitch, it's like a season that just kind of stumbles to a finish with more uncertainty.
Let's move down into League One. Let's crack on. Let's try and get through League One and League Two. Wolves spoiled the party as Sheffield United celebrated their 125th anniversary at Bramall Lane on Saturday. James Henry and Dave Edwards with the goal. They won 2-0. A good way to bounce back from losing to Crawley last week. That win keeps Wolves top, although Brentford beat Coventry 3-1 to stay a point behind with a game in hand. And Orient drew 1-1 at Walsall. It leaves them 4 points back. And Carl, we talked about the fact that last season in the Championship you needed a hell of a lot of points to stay up. Mark Warburton, the Brentford manager, said after the game on Saturday he thinks his side need a minimum of 95 points to be assured automatic promotion this season. What do you reckon?
Which sounds an incredible amount, but you've got to say you can't see them not doing that, to be honest. 95 points is 16 more from their last 10 games. I've got the maths right on that one, I believe, which you've got to suggest.
5 wins and a draw.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, I don't know their next few fixtures off the top of my head without looking. I know they've got to play a few away games next. I do know that. Leyton Orient Wolves have got to play each other as well. I think that's might even be the penultimate game of the season.
I'll give you those fixtures, Carl.
Thank you very much.
Tuesday evening, Rotherham will be hosting Brentford at the New York Stadium.
Four of the top six played each other on Tuesday,
which is a big game. Rotherham been going well. Then Brentford are away to Oldham at the weekend. Then they are away to Sheffield United before returning back to Griffin Park to take on lowly Notts County. So a bit of a mixed bag for them in the next few weeks. But like you say, I mean, apart from that 3-0 loss to Wolves a few weeks back, there's no team really that they haven't shown that they can confidently beat in this division. So they should be confident about all those games.
It does show, obviously, the three of them are sort of so neck and neck. I know there's a little gap to Orient now that, I mean, Wolves slipping up at Crawley, they've been on a great run. They have one defeat and suddenly now Brentford win that game and they're back top again.
Yeah.
So it just shows it's very small margins at this stage of the season. In the playoffs, Rotherham, as Dave just mentioned there, with a 1-0 win at Peterborough. And I mentioned at the top of the show, by the way, Steve Evans, that's 50 wins in his first 100 games at Rotherham.
Can't argue with that.
Hell of a stat. And we mentioned at the top of the show that someone won some money on the show because MK Dons came back from 2-0 down to win 3-2 at Stevenage. That was you.
Don't worry, I'll be here next week. I'm not flying off to the Bahamas anytime soon.
And and that's really tightened it up as well.
But
it's
a wonderful way to win that, actually, because they were 2-0 down with 15 minutes to go, I think. And then MK Dons come back with a wonderful comeback. Dean Lewington scored. And lo and behold, why did they come back? Why were they allowed the opportunity to get the 3-2 victory? There was about 7 or 8 minutes of injury time. Stevenage home game. Lo and behold,
surprise.
Exactly. Yeah.
Ben Reeves, pick of the goals in that, 30 yards. Unbelievable strike. And they're only 3 points off posh now, MK Dons. Down at the bottom, well, it's a bit of a free-for-all still, isn't it? So many teams involved. In fact, Coventry, who were going, you know, really well earlier in the season, are now below Bristol City.
Yeah.
So, and they're getting sucked towards
Presley
it.
I think Presley will likely be, wouldn't surprise me at all if he was off in the summer. You know, I think even though they have obviously haven't been able to sustain that early season form, I think people have been impressed with what he's done there and how he's dealt with it this season. So I wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, takes a job either in the upper echelons of League One or maybe even the Championship.
Down at the bottom of League Two, Notts County, 4-1 win against Carlisle. They needed that great overhead kick from Gary Liddell in that game. That drops Carlisle into the relegation zone. And of course, Greg Abbott is the Notts County assistant manager now. So he sort of did one over on his old club there. Elsewhere, Oldham beat Crawley, Tranmere lost, Colchester and Bristol City drew. Crewe and Shrewsbury, the big winners. Shrewsbury with their first home win in 11 against Bradford. It was kind of scissor kick type volley, wasn't it, from Sean Miller at the end. Brilliant finish to win that. And Crewe chucks an EK. Two more for him. 16 this season now. Is he on loan from Arsenal?
Chucks of Hazard. We always say that when he scores at the weekend, but it's not
fair
funny
enough.
Is it?
Doesn't really work.
That doesn't really work.
Why do you
it looks like Chooks, actually. That's why when it's spelled on Sky.
Right, okay. What was I saying?
That's all I've got. That is the sum of my contribution to Crew's victory. I apologise.
Analysis like that in the bottom of League One, which people listen every week.
I'm desperately searching for. There we go. That's Chooks of Hazard, isn't it?
Good.
Just a good old
No, do you play this when he scores?
Should do. Pay the royalties.
Right, I think we should move on. Let's get out. League Two. The top three are pulling clear. 6-point gap between third and fourth. Rochdale with back-to-back away wins this week. Northampton and Wickham. Chesterfield drew at Mansfield. Paddy Madden scored a great goal for Scunny against Burton. Fleetwood, as we mentioned, lost to Exeter. And Oxford, let's get on to Oxford. They're actually playing as we record. They're losing at Southend as we record this. But they've got a new manager, Mickey Lewis, signing off with a win against Hartlepool. Gary Waddock is the new Oxford manager. Who's managed QPR, Aldershot and Wickham.
Apparently, I was reading some quotes from Ian Lennigan, the chairman of Oxford United, saying they had 71 applications and a shortlist of 12 for the job, which made me start to think who else would want to.
So, which is the only Football League manager that didn't apply for the Oxford job?
Probably
Billy Davies.
Billy Davies. Billy Davies, yeah.
Oxford, well, I know Chris Wilder departing was a big surprise to everyone. But to say nothing, 7 or 8 weeks it's taken them to appoint someone.
Well, they were just in danger of dropping out. I mean, this result isn't going to do them any favours because it's going to sort of get Southend closer and maybe back into the playoffs. They're winning 2-0 as I say these words. In fact, nearly 2-1 there.
So they will be, they'll have 56 points after this game, Southend, if they win.
Their first win in forever.
Which will be back into the top seven and only 3 points behind Oxford. So, yeah, massive win.
We appreciate it, by the way, that there's games sort of all the time at the moment. So, apologies if this is slightly out of date when you hear this.
I believe the term is thick and fast.
Indeed. Plymouth with a 1-0 draw at Accrington at the weekend. Great goal from Ruben Reid. What a season he's having. York winning at Pompey, but Carl, I'm sure you agree the highlight of that was the open goal miss by Ryan Bowman.
That's not even League Two standards.
Look at Portsmouth though.
I know. Well, we were maybe going to cover them today because they're perilously close, aren't
they? Bookies' favourites to win the title at the start of the season, weren't they?
Yeah, I think they were even odds on. They were that
absolutely ridiculous. And they're, 3 points now from dropping out of the Football League potentially. You'd have some real concerns about, Pompey if they do drop out in terms of the structure of the club. Is it, what's it going to be like? What are the adjustments going to be made if they were to become a non-league club? That, they probably still get a lot of fans, but as we've said many and many times, it's not easy to come back into the Football League regardless of how big you are.
Down at the bottom, just making me nervous just looking at it, we're only a point above Portsmouth. We've got a game in hand. We're drawing too much at the moment, just death by a thousand draws in our case.
I suppose that is better than some of the teams below. I mean, teams and getting on a run,
but goal difference is in your favour though, isn't it?
Yeah. Rather than having like four draws in a row though, can we not just like win two and lose two? Yep. That'd be much better. Down at the weekend, Torquay again, they beat us in last week, which is a bad blow for us, but then they followed that up losing to Newport on Saturday. And we should mention the AFC Wimbledon Cheltenham game, which had 4 goals in 5 minutes and some ridiculously changing weather. It's a beautiful day in the first goal. The last goal was absolutely chucking it down. And we need to finish before we go. We need to get out of here, but Johnston's Pate Trophy final on Sunday. Chesterfield versus Peterborough. Chesterfield going for their second JPT in 3 years, because Carl, you were there and you were quite drunk when you came in, did the podcast after it, remember it?
Yeah, very much so.
Were you Paolo Di Canio mask?
I had my Paolo Di Canio mask.
You've lost it now, haven't you?
Yeah, I left it in my
you
old
long
flat
for that?
Yeah, no, not really. I could have got £5 off some Johnston paint because there was a voucher on the back of the
probably
mask.
Expired by now.
What
do you reckon this game then? Because we've got Peterborough, who have had a bit of an up and down season, but if they can win this, that'll obviously get them in good stead going into the last section for the playoffs. And Chesterfield, obviously, been at the top all season, now down in third.
The gap between the two, you'd naturally assume it'd be Peterborough. Chesterfield beat us a couple of years ago, they were bottom of League One and we were top of League Two at the time, and we were terrible back then. They won 2-0.
Didn't you miss a goal or something?
I missed. Chesterfield scored about 40 seconds into the second half and I was still at the bar drinking, and it was down at the other end.
They scored, put really so after that.
Yeah, should have gone home. Really.
Dave, prediction?
I think Chesterfield will do it. I don't know why, I've just got a feeling that they will.
Okay, lump on everyone.
Yeah.
Well, I'll go Peterborough on that basis, but I wouldn't begrudge Chesterfield another victory as the smaller team out of the two.
Okay, right. Well, maybe we'll talk about that on the show next week. Thank you to all our guests today. Please let us know what you think about the whole Billy Davies situation. We had a few tweets I didn't get a chance to read out this week. At Waggy Podcast is the Twitter. The website is wearegoingup.co.uk. All the interviews are on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/Waggy Podcast. And if you would like to download a free audiobook, thanks to our mates at Audible, you can still get that right now. audible.co.uk/goingup. Right, we're going to Nottingham this weekend, aren't we?
God, aren't we just?
Yeah. So I don't know if
getting Nottingham Forest.
A Forest playing at home, I'm not sure.
Let's have a look.
Take a trip down. No, they're playing Ipswich, aren't they? I think that's away.
Yeah.
That's a big game. So we'll have tales from...
Shame. What about Notts County?
Have a look.
Let's go to Mansfield. That's only up the road.
Good point. Yeah.
Someone's got to be at home, if not, we'll go over the Derby.
Alfredson. We're going to none of these places.
Notts County are away at Crewe.
No, that's not. That's on Tuesday.
Oh.
The dream's alive. Come on. We can still do it.
Bear with us, lads.
Terribly.
Buffering.
Still buffering.
Well, Derby are... Notts County are home to Chesterfield.
Derby are home to Charlton.
Home to Colchester.
Okay.
We can go to Meadow Lane.
Right, we're going to Meadow Lane.
Big game. We're not going to Meadow Lane.
We'll be back next week. We'll speak to you in 7 days' time.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.